1, 2, 3.
Well, now when I woke up this morning, as blue as I could be, I couldn't sleep last evening.
That sounds good. The George Bush Blues, performed by Lightning Boy Malcolm. And I want to sing the, I got the Bill and Hillary Blues, but I'll do that one afterwards. Hey, Vijay Prashad, are you around?
Yes, sir. I'm waiting for you.
Thank you. I'm waiting for you, my brother. So how you doing?
I'm scared of who's listening to us on the phone, but I hope whatever they listen, they learn.
That's right. I mean, there's nothing worse than being under surveillance and turning out bad commentary, right?
There it is.
So tell us, George Bush went to Latin America. This was his more democratic face. He was not there to dominate. He was there to be a friend. He was there to discuss trade, not military. How did he do? And did anybody believe him?
Well, the first thing is, one, it's remarkable. There's so few places that he can go and be welcomed. Even in Colombia, which is his, where he has the closest friends, at least in terms of the government, he couldn't spend the night. And he had to fly in and meet the president in the presidential palace and then fly out a few hours later. When his plane was coming into land in Bogota, the front of the plane, Bush and his spin masters were telling the press that, you know, things are improving in Colombia and security is improving and this is going to be a leading country. And at the back of the plane where the press was sitting, on the TV monitors was flashing most dangerous country CIA alert. So, you know, we have a situation where Bush is so widely hated that there's such, you know, few places where he can be welcomed. He decided to go to South America, and it was basically an unfriendly situation except for a few governments.
Well, one thing I'd like to talk about is if you saw the picture of Bush hugging President Lula, it reminded me of the picture of Sammy Davis Jr. hugging Richard Nixon, if you remember that one.
Yes.
Except this time, and each of them are equally discomforted in the hug, Lula looked rather pathetic. Now, how did Lula and Brazil become a relatively friendly place for the Bush administration? Is that true?
Well, there are two places that were surprising. One was Brazil and Lula, and the other was Uruguay and Tabaré Vázquez, who leads, you know, has led a Marxist-Leninist life, who leads the Socialist Party, which broke the back of a two-party system to take power in Uruguay. Both Brazil's Workers' Party and Lula and Tabaré Vázquez's Socialist Party hosted Bush. Now, this was extraordinary. You know, one can imagine him going to Colombia where the right rules. One can imagine him going to Guatemala. But to be hosted in a very friendly fashion in Brazil and in Uruguay was surprising. Now, the thing is that in Brazil, there's a major split. It's been well demonstrated that Lula, in the last election, essentially ran as Lula, not as the Workers' Party on a platform. In Brazil, increasingly, there's been a move to make the presidential race, at least in Lula's last two outings, about personality and not program. So Brazil is in a crisis of government, as it were, where the party and their presidential candidate seem to be speaking different languages. And so Lula, in his quest to make nice to international capital, I think felt compelled to welcome Bush. Uruguay is a complicated story. Here you have a leftist leader who is forthrightly against the war in Iraq, welcomes Bush. This is the same country that in 1991 was the site of the negotiations over the general agreement on trade and tariffs at Punta del Este in Uruguay. So it has a long and enduring history in being associated with free trade. But Tabaré Vázquez had broken that dynamic and had decided that there was another path to follow for his country, a very small country, a large chunk of Uruguayans as it is live in the United States. And yet he welcomed, you know, George Bush. Now, across the river, across the Silver River, very nicely named river that divides Montevideo and Buenos Aires, of course, there was Nestor Kirchner of Argentina, and by his side, wearing a red jacket, Hugo Chavez of Venezuela. And it is this speech where Chavez, who probably speaks worse English than Bush speaks Spanish, paused in the middle of his, you know, very long speech. He paused for a little while, and then he said, "Gringo, go home." So, you know, we had all these voices from below saying, "Gringo, go home," and yet a few countries chose to welcome him. We'll see in about 6 months, four, five, 6 months, what rate of return there's been for Tabaré Vázquez and Lula and others. Because some deals must have been cut in order for them to say, okay, we'll host him for a day, we'll lose some political capital, but we need some good deal from the United States.
Well, let's just take the Brazilian Workers' Party for a minute. I'm pretty disappointed with them, is the least of what I would say. I remember that I went to a Left Refoundation meeting organized by different forces who argue that the Brazilian Workers' Party was the model. And I totally disagreed with that. And the theory was here was Trotskyists, Maoists, Marxists, left social forces in one very, very broad party. That's not in itself inherently wrong. But in watching their development, as you pointed out, even in the last, not this election, but the last election, Lula basically said, look, to all the left groups, we're getting 1/3 to 40% of the vote. If I want to go over and get a majority, I'm going to have to make a neoliberal compromise. In the last 6 years, the Brazilian stock market, if you wanted to invest money, was the best place to go because it's just been turning money over hand over fist. And in the second election, while the left still agreed to vote for Lula, he's done nothing but have contempt for them. Now, that's bad enough, but for the Brazilian Workers' Party, not just Lula, to make the tactical decision to welcome Bush, I think is, I got to be careful what word I want to use, but disgraceful? How about that for a understanding?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's a pretty good word. You know, there's a lot of anger and animosity within the party as well as within the mass fronts that are alongside but not in the party. And I'm thinking of, you know, the
MST.
MST. The Movement Sin Terra, the, you know, homeless people's movements. I mean, they're much broader than movement only of the homeless. They're about people who live in urban shanties. Those are some broad social fronts which are associated but not subsumed by the Workers' Party. There's a lot of resentment at the, you know, moves and directions. But, you see, it's a Faustian bargain. The bargain was, as you said, Lula had made it clear to win, this is what we need to do. We need to appease the bankers. And, you know, he ran in this last election cycle. He essentially ran as Lula and not as the nominee of the Workers' Party. And, you know, this is a familiar kind of presidentialization of politics where people run as personalities rather than on a platform. And you know how we have it. We, of course, past masters at this. We'll say, well, you know, Bush is more believable than Kerry. He's a flip-flopper. You know, personalities dictate the electoral choices rather than the platform on which they run, the discipline, etc.
Well, here you're with, this is Eric Mann, talking to Vijay Prashad, who's a great writer, a very important leftist, and can comment on virtually any country in the United States, in the world. Let's segue quickly to something positive before we get sick, which is the Venezuelan government. I just came back from 2 weeks and watched that election. On one level, there is even more personality, one could say, of Chavez than Lula, and a better personality. On the other hand, there was phenomenal grassroots participation, not discipline in terms of controlling his actions, but the level of the poorest of the poor and the darkest of the dark, the clarity of how he was writing and the positions he was talking about is, if I'm elected, I promise to move towards a socialist objective. If I'm elected, I promise to expand state authority to take over more specific elements of capital. If I'm elected, I plan to use more oil revenues for social programs, including giving money and programs to the poor to build social movements. I was very impressed when I saw it in 2 weeks with Manuel Piollo. What's your sense in tracking that revolution?
Well, there are three levels to look at Venezuela. One is, of course, internal. And internal, you know, there have been some remarkable developments. When I was last in L.A. and we had a discussion about Chavez and the Bolivarian movement, I had said that, you know, one has to wait and see. We'll have to see. There's some caution. In that period, you know, he has decided to deepen the revolution. He's decided to have some kind of democratic party formed. This is very important. You know, it took the Cubans 2.5 years to create a political party after they seized power in 59-60. It's taken the Bolivarians a little longer, but in a sense, their situation is more complicated. They are much luckier than the Cubans in that they have this oil revenue.
That's right.
Now, it comes down to whether the oil revenue will be used strategically. 60% of Venezuelan oil exports go into the United States. So, in a sense, Venezuelan's prosperity is inextricably linked to the United States. This is a very peculiar situation. You know, in other words, U.S., reliance on petroleum is going to provide the Venezuelans with the ability to deepen their revolution. So it comes to how much strategic space, you know, Chavez can create, political space, with that money, and that's domestically. And, you know, some of those ideas about reseeding rural areas is tremendous. And again, those are long-term projects. We'll see in the short term what kind of foundation is built toward that. Then regionally, you know, it's extraordinary. I mean, the fact that he's been able to knit together this regional foundation, this regional alliance, is very, very, it's very credible. In other words, it's not that they are just coming with him for the oil money. He's been very generous with his money. It's his pressure, in a sense, that has made the Bush administration no friend at all of, you know, foreign aid, to go out to Latin America and start promising aid. The Bush administration is keener to promise aid to Latin America than to promise aid to the people of Louisiana and New Orleans. You know, it's extraordinary. There are more welfare programs for South America than for the United States. And that's only because of Chavez. In a sense, one can say that when Chavez next winter comes back and says, I'm going to give you cheaper oil, we'll see what the Bush administration will do then. You know, in Massachusetts and in New York State, we get cut-rate oil thanks to Citgo and Chavez for the poor in the United States, but that as yet has not been met with anything comparable from the government. On the third front, which is the international front, apart from his regional alliances in South America, at last year's, in July 2006, Chavez went to the African Union Summit. And this was very interesting. When he went and spoke there, talked to people, leaders who I don't consider at all to be of the left, made comments like, he gives us hope. He shows us that we can make it. In other words, you know, he's providing leadership globally and hope globally. When he went to the non-aligned meeting in Havana in September 2006, Chavez spoke about, you know, reviving NAM, the non-aligned movement, reviving South-South ties, creating a Bank of the South, etc. Now, all that is visionary, and one will wait and see. Just to return to Africa for a minute.
Tie up a little bit, Vijay.
Okay.
But you can go to Africa.
Yeah, in Africa, in the last year, the South African Communist Party has started a discussion on whether to maintain the alliance with the ANC, what the National Democratic Revolution means. This has been a very, very deep discussion. And at some level, if tomorrow the SACP decides to open some independent path for itself, it has the capacity to become a major ally for Chavez and, in a sense, the Chavez of Africa. So I think there's a lot of hope to be seen here. There's so much pressure being put on the United States that, in a sense, Chavez's moves in South America brought Bush to South America.
Well, Vijay, I'll end with this. This is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Frontlines, 98.7 FM. We're on the phone with Vijay Prashad, the commentator, professor, and movement organizer. You know, I'd end on my end by saying the reason why I do call myself a third worldist and why my strategy, I guess from 1965 on, has been how the black movement in the United States and oppressed nationality movements in the United States, in alliance with the third world, can eventually weaken U.S. imperialism. I think one of the things we're seeing in this period of insane overextension on the part of the United States is, one, is a lot of people in Latin America saying, thank God for Iraq, that the United States invasion of Iraq, which is, of course, a human rights disaster, has created an opening in Latin America. But secondly, there's still, besides the so-called objective forces, the subjective or conscious forces. And the thing I love the most about Hugo Chavez is he reminds me of a character from Franz Fanon's The Wretch of the Earth. He is the person who will stand up directly to the imperialist, directly to the colonialist, to challenge him on his own terms, to not simply sneak around while he's overextended, but actually try to expand the influence, as you were saying. So if we watch Chavez's regionalism, if we watch Chavez's move, if we see China's moves in Africa, there is the potential of some very, very interesting international alliances that actually can give us some hope in the United States. And with that, assuming you think it's pretty good, Vijay, I'm going to say goodbye to you, my dear friend. And
yes, sir. I'm waiting for the fire to start burning inside our own hearts.
We're trying. We're trying every way we can, okay?
We'll talk soon.
Nice to see you. Nice to talk with you. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Jay Levin.